The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
The Jericho Network on Westwood One. All right, that metal show is a VH1 staple. After 14 seasons, it still continues on. And I've got all three hosts today, Eddie Trunk, Don Jameson, Jim Florentine. That's right, all three together are going to talk all things heavy metal and heavy rock and roll. We actually recorded this interview on their set in New York City the night when myself and Rich Ward guested on the show. And what a night it was. It was a few months ago, but still a great, great time and a great conversation. We talked about everything from their very first episode to their favorite guests on TMS to some of the biggest names in rock who refuse to do the show. You're also going to hear some great rock and roll stories about Axl Rose, Guns N' Roses, Kiss, Iron Maiden, and Rush. It's a cool behind-the-scenes look at that metal show. And if you want a real behind-the-scenes look at how DDP Yoga works and how Diamond Dallas Page's program is literally saving lives, then check out Eric Thacker's video and pictures at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, all right? I've told you what DDP Yoga has done for me, and now you can see someone else's story, and this is legit. If you got a DDP Yoga success story of your own, I want to hear about it, and I want you to tweet me your story at TalkIsJericho and use the hashtag podcast1, podcast O-N-E. One lucky winner is going to get a copy of the DDP Yoga program signed by the man, the guru, the Jedi himself, Diamond Dallas Page. So tweet your DDP Yoga stories to at Talk is Jericho. And let's get back to Eric Thacker's amazing story. The brief version is his wife actually emailed me because Eric listens to this podcast. She wanted me to know how great Eric is doing, that the weight is still off, and that he's living an amazing life. She also thanked DDP and DDP Yoga for saving her husband, okay? And the reason why is that Eric was very, very unhealthy, tipping the scales at a whopping 448 pounds. I mean, that's huge. His doctor basically told him if he didn't do something about it, he was going to die. All right. And Eric started DDP Yoga after 1 month on Dallas's amazing program. He had lost 30 pounds. Okay. After 2 months, he was down 55 pounds. How great is that? And by the third month, Eric had changed his diet to healthy whole foods. And at the end of his first year on the program, had lost 185 pounds. Okay, that's the size of an adult male, a good size adult male. He lost that in weight. Not only changed his life, he reclaimed it. He owns his life now. You got to see the video and pictures. You can check that out at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. It's incredible. DDP Yoga has helped tens of thousands of people. And if you're one of them, let me know. Tweet your DDP Yoga story to at Talk is Jericho. Use the hashtag podcast1, that's podcast O-N-E, and you could win a copy of the DDP Yoga program autographed by Diamond Dallas Page himself. That's right. Just tweet me your DDP Yoga story at Talk is Jericho. Use the hashtag podcast1 for your chance to win an autographed DDP Yoga program. A winner will be chosen at random. You still got time to experience your own DDP Yoga story. Talk about an amazing Christmas gift, because DDP Yoga is what he's going to do to help you have a good Christmas, a healthy Christmas, a getting in shape Christmas. He's going to give you guys, the sexy beast listeners of Talk is Jericho, a great deal on DDP Yoga. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of it now. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. DDP Yoga changes lives. It can change yours. Check it out today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. The pot of thunder and rock and roll, the remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride, because it's Friday. And let's kick off the weekend. It's Star Wars Day with Unstoppable by Fozzy right here on TIJ. Unstoppable, baby. It's Star Wars Day. It's that metal show day. A monumental day. The birthday of Keith Richards today. Happy birthday to Keith, my close personal friend who I met once and talked to for 15 minutes. But I'll never, ever forget that experience. And thanks to all of you, first off, for listening to the show today and for subscribing to Talk is Jericho on iTunes. Subscribing is the way to go, all right? You get the episodes delivered to the device of your choice as soon as they're released. Helps me out in the process. You know why? It also helps me out if you give me a 5-star rating and a comment. You know why? The bigger the show gets, the more tracking and the more traction it gets on iTunes, the bigger guests I can get, all right? You want me to get Jaleel White, Urkel from Family Matters? All right, start rocking those iTunes 5-star ratings and comments, okay? Go hit up iTunes, subscribe to Talk is Jericho, give us some killer comments, 5-star rating, make it happen, and I will deliver Jaleel White straight to you. All right, it's been a busy week, okay? Last week, I had the honor First off, if you've been following me on Instagram, Chris Jericho Fozzy, you saw that I was on stage at the Whiskey jamming with an amazing all-star band, which I'll tell you about. And that was all at Lemmy's 70th birthday party, which was, first of all, a huge honor to be invited to it. Also for Lemmy, who's been nothing but great to me. He was on Talk Is Jericho last year, about this time. If you haven't heard the show, go back and check it out. He was an amazing interview. Such a cool guy. Always been great to me. Always been great to Fozzy. Motorhead is a great organization, very classy. So when I got the invite, I couldn't wait to go and hang out with Lem and pay my respects to him. 70 years old. I don't know anybody else who's 70 besides my dad, I think maybe. Vince, Norm, a couple guys that are in their 70s. But and a part of the reason why I went is I was also not only invited to the party itself, but also invited to take part in the All-Star Jam that was happening. And my assignment, if you will, if I chose to take it, was given to me by Matt Sorum, who was the drummer of Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver, who said he was kind of the musical director, and he sent me an email and asked if I would like to be a part of it. And I was like, wow, I mean, that's a pretty big honor. What song do you want me to do? And he said, how about Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers by ZZ Top? If you haven't heard it, go check it out. It's a great killer, just a rock and jam and tune. And the band was, it was me and Whitfield Crane from Ugly Kid Joe. We kind of trade off the vocals, which is how the song goes. The original Billy Gibbons and Dusty Hill trade off the vocals. So we had me and Whit on vocals, then Slash on guitar, which was amazing, of course, jamming with Slash. Robert Trujillo from Metallica on bass guitar. Charlie Benanti from Anthrax on drums, and Scott Ian from Anthrax on rhythm guitar. Now, not to mention the fact that all those guys, with the exception of Whit, are Talk Is Jericho alumni, but also all of them on stage. And I was like, man, I'm the only guy in this group that does not have a platinum record. So there you go. And that's also why it was such a huge honor to be there and to sing with those guys. And it wasn't like there was a huge gang of other people involved. Earlier in the night, Zakk Wylde played with Matt Sorum and Blasco, a couple Sabbath tunes. Billy Idol sang a tune with Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols. Sebastian Bach was there. Duff McKagan, Steve Vai played a song. Doug Pinnock from King's X, Bob Kulick was playing. So it wasn't like there was a whole lot of people. That was about it. So to have my my rocking ass in there singing with those dudes was just a moment I'll never forget. You got to go on Instagram and just check out the clips. Of course, nobody that I know filmed it. Nobody took pictures, so I had to go online and find them. So if anybody was there at the Whiskey for Lemmy's 70th and took some rocking pictures of me and Slash and the guys jamming Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers, please post those at Talk Is Jericho so I can check them out. Video clips, anything else like that. You think that I would have it all down and pictures taken and all that stuff, but no, I wasn't smart enough to do that. But cool to be around that rock and roll royalty. Like I said, Billy Idol was there. Lars was there, Lars Ulrich, who I'm trying to get on this podcast. He already said he's going to do it, but he said he'll do it when the new Metallica record comes out. And I said, so when, 2020? And he's like, yeah, sometime around then. So once again, great to be part of that. Lemmy was there. It was actually funny. I had this really cool video clip that someone had put together, kind of a tribute to Lemmy at 70, and he was reading a book during it. Tell me Lemmy cares about any of this stuff. Oh yeah, Gilby Clark was there too. Very, very cool guy. Never met him. The entire lineup of Guns N' Roses was there, with the exception of Axl. The entire Use Your Illusion lineup, I should say. So yeah, and this is a rock and roll show. Such a rock and roll night. And here we are now, finally, the 2016 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees have been announced. Motorhead should be in there. Lemmy should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, let's be honest with that. I mean, there's nobody more rock and roll than him. But one good thing is Lemmy, it wasn't even nominated. Hopefully Motorhead will be nominated for an upcoming time. But now, for me, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as I've said on this show, and a lot of you have been tweeting me saying that you're holding me responsible for Deep Purple finally getting inducted, holding me responsible in a good way, that my influence somehow had something to do with it. But I think it was more on the lines of the fact that it's about time that Deep Purple finally got in, because if you look, and I've said this for years, that one of the three biggest omissions were Rush, Kiss, and Deep Purple, and over the last few years, all those bands have gone in. Okay, so Deep Purple's finally in, which is great, and they're in with almost the entire lineup of the band, which is cool. Glenn Hughes, David Coverdale, whole different, there's about 10 guys going in. Which once again, pisses me off that Bruce Kulick and Eric Carr did not go in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. When Kiss was inducted, they should be in there. It's a travesty that they aren't. But anyways, the fact that all those guys from Deep Purple in is cool. And then also Cheap Trick going in is also amazing, which I'm very happy about. And I think what's happening now, and I was talking to Paul Stanley about this, is now that there's more rock bands like Rush and Kiss and Metallica and Sabbath, a little known thing is when you get inducted into the Hall of Fame, you now are allowed to vote. And the more kind of those 70s and 80s rock bands that go in, the more 70s, 80s rock bands will continue to go in. So the fact that this year that Cheap Trick and Deep Purple are going in, it's a hell of a bill, along with Steve Miller Band, which is cool. NWA, which I think is very poignant right now, and the Hall of Fame always wants to put somebody in there for street cred. And of course, I think they should go in. I mean, why not, right? And then I think the other band that's going in is Chicago, which if you don't know Chicago, they've been around for 40 years as well. They're probably going to kill it. They might be the best band of the evening that night, you know. And also, too, you're talking about Deep Purple. Who's going to show up? Will Ritchie Blackmore show up? The elusive, evasive Ritchie Blackmore, who's basically disappeared from rock and roll for the last 25 years. Now he's finally doing some rock shows this summer, kind of a rainbow reunion. Not a reunion because it's all new guys, but a Ritchie Blackmore rainbow appearance. Will he show up at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? I don't know. I do know this. Me and Wise Cousin Chad will be there for the third year in a row, especially after last year meeting Paul McCartney, hearing Yoko Ono pee. If you haven't heard that story, go back and listen to it on one of the episodes. It's a great, great story. I might have to tell it again at some point. But my point is, and I know Eddie Trunk, who we're going to be talking to in a little bit here, even though this is recorded before the announcement, he was mad because it took so long to get these bands in here. The Bloom's off the rose. To me, it's never too late. And thank goodness they're finally in. Rush is in, Kiss is in, Deep Purple's in, and I would have even thrown Cheap Trick in there as a band that's like, come on. Now, there's a couple of the bands from the 70s that still need to go in, like Journey. I think Thin Lizzy should go. I think Ted Nugent, musically and longevity-wise, should go. He probably won't because of his politics. And then we start getting into the 80s, all right, which you know. I mean, Iron Maiden, Scorpions, Judas Priest, Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, those type of bands should be going in there as well. And I think you'll see more of those bands going in, because now Paul Stanley's voting, and now, you know, Lars Ulrich is voting, and now Ozzy Osbourne is voting, and pretty soon, you know, this year you got Rick Nielsen is going to be doing it, and Robin Zander is going to be doing it. So we're getting more and more people involved that will bring in more rock and roll bands into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I'm very excited that Deep Purple is getting in. I'm also very excited to see who's going to show up. David Coverdale, Talk Is Jericho alumni, inducted with Deep Purple. He was in Deep Purple for years, replaced Ian Gillan. So we've got a lot of different things of what's going to happen and where are the winds going to blow, shall we say, for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But there's always great, great controversy and always great anticipation over who's going to get in. But this year, finally, Deep Purple got in. And actually, to be honest with you, I did not think Cheap Trick was going to get in. I thought Yes might get in or The Cars. So I'm very happy this year, and I'm really excited. Betsy Hill from Rolling Stone magazine going to hook up me and Wise Cousin Chad. We will be there to rock it, and we will give you an on-the-spot report, okay? And I'm also going to give you an on-the-spot report about Star Wars on Monday. I'm going tonight with the Irvin kids. I'm going to do a review with the kids. We're going to air that next week. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff coming up. Most importantly, coming up today, it's the entire cast, the hosts, the panel of That Metal Show. Eddie Trunk, Don Jameson, and Jim Florentine are going to be here. Before we get to the boys,
the longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, we are back here at the That Metal Show studios, the private studios, the compound. I'm going to say it was built specifically for this show. And the reason why I say that is this is my third appearance here. And I think the first time was at some little studio down in the Bowery somewhere. And I'm here with the three hosts, of course, my old friend Eddie Trunk and Don Jameson and Jim Florentine, and they're all looking through their sheets and paying zero attention to what I'm doing because they got a show today.
No, because we know your setup. You got to set it up. It's your podcast, yeah. So we're going to jump in when you're done.
Chuckle
your little
BS.
Intro.
Yeah. And they didn't build this for us. The studio's actually been here. This is where Bill Cosby actually taped the Cosby Show years ago.
And if you've ever seen...
I just found a leftover drink. You want some, Chris?
Yeah.
If you've ever seen,
I'm a little woozy.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the high profile, high quality TV production that we put on a weekly basis, you understand that we need this high level of prep and these sort of surroundings. We're very high maintenance people. We need this sort of these trappings to make this work. This machine doesn't work without this fruit plate, Jericho.
This is a fancy fruit plate, but can you guys believe that it's been 14 years that you had with a metal show on mainstream national TV in the year 2015.
Did you say 14 years?
No, it's 14 seasons.
Oh. That's years in Canadian, though.
Yeah.
No, listen, I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, it's amazing to think that we've been doing this for 7 years and averaging about two seasons a year, and we're just lucky and grateful to be doing it. I think back that I've been on this channel since 2002, which is nuts. 13 years working with these people. I can't believe they're not sick of me by now, but it's been great, and this show is obviously just...
We're the only show on the network, so yeah. They got to deal with you.
This show just keeps getting bigger and bigger, not only in America, but around the world as well. It's crazy.
And that is kind of the case. Like, there's not a lot of other shows on VH1 Classic, like original.
The mic cord is in the fruit plate. Hold on.
Right through the ranch dressing.
Now I cannot eat the red pepper now. Damn it.
Do you know where that mic cord has been?
Yeah, I bet.
Do you know where that fruit's been?
put that fruit plate out yesterday morning.
Yeah. Well, since you just had Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley, it could have been anywhere, for that matter.
Whoa, hello.
Hey, they're rock and rollers, man. You never know what goes on.
When you're talking about, like you mentioned, the VH1 Classic and how you can't believe it's been 14 seasons, it's funny how we go back to the genesis of this show, and I'd like to sort of think that the idea or one of the thoughts came from the stupid metal summits that we used to do years ago, where you just have three or four guys sitting around talking about useless trivia. We used to call it the meeting of the mindless.
That was part of it. We did the Metal Summit stuff. The truth is that I was pushing a show like this, as I said. I started back in 2002 with this network. And back then, the way things were, if people saw those old interviews, and I did interviews with so many people, if people saw those old interviews, they were very scripted. They were very rigid. I had to dress a certain way. I had to talk a certain way. It was very controlled. And I used to always say, you know, guys, you know.
Sort of like Eddie's marriage.
Yeah.
He's got his wife, a certain way. His wife dresses him. His wife lays his outfit out every day. Like the son. It's right next to his sons and his daughters every morning. Yeah. Just three outfits.
An outfit. Which T-shirt
underwear.
I'm wearing that day?
Yeah.
Which,
right?
Which black T-shirt
which
you wearing
which
that
concert
day?
T-shirt?
One time. It's like, Eddie, which UFO shirt you want to wear today?
I went to the wardrobe room today, your wardrobe room. It's 15 hangers of all black T-shirts and black jackets.
No stylist needed here.
Yeah, it's all interchangeable.
But the truth is back then I would always keep pushing them to try to do something that was a little bit more real, a little bit more in line with how I really talk and interviewed people and stuff like that. So they had always kept putting me off because the channel was a completely different thing and run by different people then. So, you know, when this came around, a lot of elements came into it too. I mean, honestly, one of the demos that I did that
Chris is looking for a percentage is what's going on here.
Well, actually, one of the things too.
Royalties.
One of most of the fruit plate.
He wants you to slip up, so he's going to hold us in court.
He's recording this?
Yeah.
The point is, though, is that... The point is, though, that there was a lot of ground laid for a show like this. Elements of my radio show, elements of the things we did. A friend of ours, Jim Brewer, I used to do stuff with him on his radio show, and that's where Stump the Trunk came from. So there's a lot of stuff that all fed into this. But when the three of us got together and the network saw the incredible, engaging, charming, sexy people that the three of us are, they had no choice but to do a TV show with us. So
definitely sexy too. How did you guys get involved, Don and Jim? We know Trunk has been doing this for 30 odd years and looks every year of it. But be honest, I mean, being a metal fan and a comic fan, you guys were based mostly out of New York. You had a couple of things, but this has kind of really helped jumpstart your career in a whole different way.
Me and Don would do stand-up gigs Eddie had his radio show in New York Friday nights, his metal show from 11 to 2. And we'd be driving home from gigs and listening to music he's playing. We're like, man, we like the same shit. How do we not know this guy? And then we met him at a concert. He blew us off, you know, because we're dudes.
They always say that. And
didn't,
I
we
know
didn't
I
have breasts.
Yeah, I didn't have a Rush shirt on or a UFO shirt, so.
Y&T.
Yeah, I was wearing a Black Sabbath shirt with Ozzy in it, and he's like, he couldn't talk to me.
Yeah, right, I had to be Dio.
And then I had a Kiss jacket on with, you know, the new guys in it, and he was like, forget it, I'm not talking to you, dude.
The first time I met him, he blew me off, too, at some hard rock party, and they took me there with Megaforce Records, Missy Caluzzo, and Eddie totally blew me off. So
Missy Caluzzo. You're really good friends with her, Caluzzo. She's
Canadian.
Got a new name.
Yeah. That's how they say it there.
Well, you can see that all three of these guys are just shoveling nothing but BS right now. Because they can't even pronounce what they're saying right.
By the way, shout out to Kickaxe.
Thank you.
Canadian's finest.
We finally got the Kickaxe shout out.
Headpins, baby. Headpins.
You don't know how many people from Winnipeg go, tell Eddie Trunk to play more Kickaxe. Brent Fitz, Todd Kearns, all the guys from Slash's band. They say...
I got calls last night, a guy from Canada. He's like, you don't play enough Canadian stuff. Where's the Headpins? Where's the Kickaxe? Where's the Santers? I'm like, look, what?
April Wine.
I just want to bang Lee Aaron.
Wow, even now, she's still hot.
Absolutely. Yeah, I saw a recent picture of her.
But Darby Mills, the singer of the Headpins, not so hot, for anybody who knows who the Headpins are. Okay. So how did you guys get involved?
So then we meet Eddie at a show, and he says, hey, you guys are comics, come on up on the show. You know, we'll talk music or whatever like that. So we just went up there, you know, on one of his radio shows, and we just started rapping. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, pitch a show to VH1. I got some connections over there. He goes, we can't call it that Jericho show, which we want to.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have
to call it. Stick it up my ass.
So we'll call it that metal show.
The thing is that what happened was is because the network was so used to seeing me work for them under the confines of what the previous regime wanted. In other words, very rigid, very controlled, very serious. They didn't think that I could laugh. They didn't think that I could bust balls and take it and dish it out and have fun. I certainly could. I wasn't allowed to. I literally had to read word for word from a script. So when they talked to me about the show, they said, well, we want you to do this show, but we need you to have a couple guys out there. Do you know any sort of guys that would bust balls that could be, you know, comics and have some bring something light to the table? And I was like, of course I do. Most importantly, not only do I know guys like that, because, again, these guys started, we'd become friends, but I said I also, what was really important to me was, yes, they can provide that, but they are also truly fans of the music as well. Because I just didn't want somebody to be a goofster out there with me and just, you know, rattle the cage. I wanted somebody that actually could speak the language and had an appreciation of the music. Because at the end of the day, no matter how much ball busting we do, it's important that people know we know and love and care about the music and the artists.
It is amazing, too. Like, all throughout high school and even now, here we are in our 40s and whatever old you're like. 52 or something, drunk or whatever it is.
Whoa. Florentine and I are the same age.
I love how
as I'm spitting a sandwich.
A 30-year radio vest got his mouth full of food.
I'm multitasking.
Spitting out raspberry seeds.
But, I mean, it's funny, though. Since we were kids, it doesn't matter where you're from or who you are, when you meet other kids or other dudes that like metal, you're instantly friends. And I'm not just talking, yeah, I love AC/DC. I mean, I'm talking about we're having a Kickaxe conversation or we can talk about Halloween or UFO or, you know, whoever that comes to mind. It's like a secret society that brings you make friends instantly.
No, my son's 4 and a half and he's in school and he wants to be in a band. And he just tells the kids in class, you want to be in a band like Slipknot with me? What about, you like Audioslave? And these kids are like, what are you talking about? And he's like, no one's into that music. I go, you'll find somebody.
Sooner or later.
But he hasn't found them yet. He's going to totally bond with them when he finally does.
Yeah.
But he's in there talking, Lamb of God? You like Lamb of God? To another 4-year-old. They're like,
no, Zane left One Direction.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you're talking about. Yeah. Exactly.
But it's true. It's like, you know, when we heard Eddie talking about bands like Saxon and Accept and, you know, the deeper bands, like you said, not just AC/DC, Metallica, but the deeper stuff, we'd be like, man, you know, that's like us, you know? And, you know, I remember you texting me one night and we were texting Saxon lyrics back and forth. And I'm like, where are you? And you're like, I'm in Scotland. I'm like, we're texting Saxon lyrics back and forth internationally, overseas.
I'm spending $250 a text to give you the lyrics of Crusader,
right.
And it's, you know, 3 a.m. where you are. What are we doing here, right?
Right. But it's exactly what
just
you said.
Just let me rock, dude. Just let me rock.
Exactly.
But I mean, and so what was it like when you guys first came to VH1 Classic with this idea? I mean, did they come to you, Eddie? Did you go to them? And I'm sure at first that when you were saying we want to talk about Saxon or talk about Y&T, they're like, absolutely not. Nobody knows those bands or cares about those bands.
The bands themselves were never really part of the discussion.
I mean the suits, would they say, who the hell is Saxon?
Why because they knew enough to know. Again, I had 5 years of history with them. Mm. I knew them. We knew each other very well. So they knew what I was about. They also knew when they first hired me in 02, they hired me because they knew of my radio show. And they knew that I was already at that point in 02. I had a radio show for almost 20 years and a lot of years in New York already. So they knew I knew all that stuff, and they weren't worried about that. They were just more worried about the one thing they didn't want. See, the show I originally talked to them about was a lot more in line with like an Inside the Actor's Studio for music. Mm-hmm. Something I'd still love to do one day, but a much more of a straight, comprehensive, 1 hour straight interview with a live audience. That's how the live audience came into this show. Mm. Because I wanted, that was kind of the initial idea. They liked elements of the idea, but they didn't like the seriousness of that, because immediately they just thought James Lipton and the guy sitting there all stuffy doing the interview. Right. And that's what they didn't want. So that's when the idea came about, okay, we'll develop this, but we want a couple, another person out there to mix it up with you as far as hosts. And then that's when I said, okay, I've got some ideas. And we went through a process, and then I called these guys. And I said, listen, I've been chipping away at this idea. I need send in your demos and send me something that you can send me. And it's a funny story that I say in the live show all the time, but one of the demos that I used is that Don and Jim were doing a video series called Meet the Creeps, that they were doing hidden camera stuff. And there was a demo of Don taking I know you don't have, you have a no curse thing on your podcast, one thing as well. Okay, so
dropping a
dump.
Okay, right.
In the upper level of a toilet bowl. And that was doing an upper decker.
In a hotel room.
With a hidden camera.
Yeah, with Jim egging me on.
On camera.
Yeah, on camera.
Is that called an upper decker?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It was an upper decker. Yeah, I took one first and then had the guy come to the hotel room, and he's like, what's going on? Because when you take an upper decker, every time you flush the bowl, little pieces go down into the water. So he can't figure out what's going on. Finally, he lifts the lid, and he sees something, what we did in there. He goes, change rooms. I don't know what went on here. Something bad happened. So as soon as we go in the other room, Don takes an upper decker, and I call the front desk. I go, something's wrong with this toilet. And
he flushes it. It comes out brown, and the hilarity ensues.
Right, wackiness.
But that's the best demo tape that we have, so that's what we submitted.
I was like, that's the best we got, man.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're into this kind of humor, we're your
Actually,
guys.
It's funny. I was at Download a couple years ago when we played Metallica, and I was talking to Hetfield. And he said, somehow we got on bad service at hotels. And he goes, you know what I used to do in the old days when we had bad service in a hotel? He goes, I'd take a dump in one of the chest of drawers and close it. And he goes, nobody ever uses the chest of drawers in a hotel room.
Never.
So after, you know, a couple of days, this ungodly smell would come out, and they couldn't figure out where it was coming from, and they'd have to shut down the room and fumigate and all that stuff. He said, I'd be laughing. Oh, I got my revenge. So this is kind of another step of this.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Taking upper decker and
Yeah, but we stay at, like, Red Roofs Inn, which smell like crap anyway, so unless they're one of your sponsors, then they're the best.
So what happened was, though, that this whole thing started to come together, and then for however it was possible, however it happened, I got them. See, there's a much bigger backstory to all this. It was way too much to get into. But I had a really, really fight. Like, to fight incredibly hard to get this show on. I'll tell you. I mean, it's a story for another day. But I had to really fight because there was a lot of internal stuff I went through and had to keep fighting and pushing and pushing. Finally, when I got the meeting.
That's the spirit of metal.
And I was able to bring Don and Jim into that version of the show at that time and got the meeting, then they met Don and Jim, and I think that what they picked up on immediately in that hour meeting was the chemistry between the three of us. The fact that, because we had all been friends, that them coming up and doing my radio show so often, because I always had a very like open door policy on my radio show. A guy like you, you know, who I only knew, who at the time only knew as a wrestler, yeah, come on up, come on the show. Jim, so many comics, so many people that I knew, if they were into metal, come on the show, on the radio show. So it was always an open door like that. And because we had already had this history together and this friendship, and we knew each other so well, I think they really picked up on that in that meeting. And they said, okay, we're going to at least take this to a pilot because, and, you know, these guys were busting my balls in the meeting. And they you know,
as comics, we've been in these pilot meetings 100 times.
Sure, I was going to ask you
that.
They
never go anywhere.
Let's just say it was very loose, the attitude in this one.
Well, yeah, we used to dress up and go into these meetings to try to impress people, and nothing ever came of it. So after a while, you just start going, who cares? Just put on jeans and T-shirts and go into the meeting and just be silly because nothing else is working. Oh. Weren't interested, like, about asking us trivia about WASP. They just like the chemistry.
Just the chemistry. Yeah. And you guys, like you said, you've been working together for a while doing the Meet the Creeps, and I know you did the, I think you did Crank Anchors together as well. So you kind of had this alliance already for a few years before this.
Yeah, and you know, Chris, just meeting metalheads on the road, like you were saying before, it's almost like your best friends the first 10 minutes. Yeah.
Right.
You could just relate to everything. And so, you know, when we didn't know Eddie that long, maybe a year, year and a half, but as soon as we got in there, you just knew the chemistry was right there. Just from bonding with metal, talking about metal.
Bonding with metal.
Yeah.
This should be an album title. Bonded with metal. Who was?
I like that.
Who else has an Angel Thermos? Come
That's
on.
Great.
Angel Hell of a Band
Angel Hell
thermos.
Of a Band Thermos. And actually, you don't have
I'm almost 50 years old, and I have an Angel Thermos.
And we're actually happy about it and excited about it. Like, oh my gosh. Who was on the pilot? Like, I'm sure having an important guest you'd want to
lead
kind of forward.
Yeah.
It was, and no one heard of, you know, Lita basically retired for like 14, 15 years. She was out of the business, and Eddie contacted her, and she wanted to make her comeback, and she was our pilot episode.
Yeah, that was a big part of it. That was because, remember, of course, nobody had ever seen this show. Nobody heard of it that entire first season because we shot everything before anything aired. You know what I'm saying?
They used to shoot the whole
pretty
thing
much,
a couple
weeks, pretty much. So I really thought that it was important. This is not a knock on anybody, but I didn't want our first show, this pilot that we didn't know if it was going to get picked up and ever go anywhere. But I wanted the best swing, and I'm like, I don't want it to be a guest that people have seen a million times on Behind the Musics and all the Talking Head shows on VH1. I want somebody to say, oh, wow, I really like that person. Whatever happened to them? And Lita fit that bill perfectly. She had just come back out of, started doing things, making music again. She was living on an island for 15 years. I had had her on my radio show. So one of the great things that I can bring to this show behind the scenes is my decades of
Your contacts.
Contacts and comfort zone with these artists so that I can cut through a lot of the BS sometime and say, hey, can you help and do me a favor? And in that first season, Lita, Rush did our first season.
Well,
I mean,
that's huge. Like, to me, like, and all due respect to Lita, obviously she's
oh, way huger. Yeah.
But when you're talking about like who's going to be an eye catcher, you see Rush. That tells me this thing is legit.
And I got to tell you, the way that came about, very simply, I had done maybe what I was telling you about, the old VH1 Classic, I did maybe 3 interviews with Rush at that studio. I had him on my radio show 3 times already at that point. I did 2 jobs for them directly. So I actually felt comfortable enough to call up to their office in Canada, tell them what was going on, and say, guys, can you do me a solid? I'm trying to get this thing off. Will you come in? And to their credit, they flew in and out from Toronto same day on their own dime. I'll never forget. It was Canadian Thanksgiving, which I didn't even know you guys had your own Thanksgiving. It was the day after their Canadian Thanksgiving. They came in and out, Getty and Alex. And, you know, I mean, stuff like that. I mean, in that first season, we had Ace Frehley on. I mean, I called in all my favors. You know, I had all the guys that I knew and that I had a good history with. They all stepped up, and a lot of the credit goes to them, too, for believing in the show and giving it a shot.
Yeah, I was glad that Lita was the first guest because I figured we would go nowhere past the first episode. So at least I get to meet Lita, you know, who was the object of my fantasies. I'd done naughty things to myself many times to her, that great video, I Remember You.
Oh, yeah. That's no.
Oh, that was Sebastian.
Oh, geez.
Oh, well, whatever.
Look what the cat dragged in.
Well, yeah.
No. Which one was it?
So I was just like, cool, meet Lita Ford. That'll be awesome. And then our careers will be over on TV. And that'll be it. So.
See, we did that show not knowing if it was ever going to air.
It's a pilot.
It's a pilot. We didn't know if it was ever going to get picked up. But the way they do their deals here at VH1 is you have to do a contract that is written out as if it's going to go, as if it is going to get picked up. In other words, you don't do a contract just for the pilot. You do it for like 3 seasons, right? So all I could keep thinking is, if this show didn't get picked up, I'm sitting here with just nothing but a big fat legal bill for my lawyer that just spent a couple weeks doing a deal for, I don't know if this is going to happen. But I walked away from the pilot. I don't know how you guys felt, but I walked out of it feeling pretty good. I knew the executives. I knew the history. I knew that if they went to that level, unless we really fell on our face in that show, we would live to see another day. And obviously, we've lived to see 14 seasons and counting.
We actually picked up for two seasons before our first season, season even aired. After the pilot episode, we're doing one, and they already picked up a second one.
Which gives you some confidence to know you have some room to play with.
Yeah.
Right, and they haven't let us have that confidence since. Because the end of every season...
you never know for sure if it's coming back
never.
Or not.
They have options, but the option is always to the network. Now, obviously, they've been great to us and they've kept picking us up, but, you know, the end of every season is almost like the end of, like, a first date. It's like, wow, so I had a lot of fun.
Hope to see you again.
Yeah, we did, too. Yeah, maybe we'll do this again. Yeah, maybe. I'll give you a call. Yeah,
sure,
please.
I
hope you call.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing sex, and you're like, wow, I can't believe that happened on the first date. Yeah. And then you're like, I don't know if she's going to
call me. Yeah.
You know, and you're waiting, and you wait, and then, you know, a month later, she's like, I lost my phone, I swear, but I track your number down through Facebook. I'm like,
and then,
all right, I guess I believe it. All right, I'm back in.
I hope it's true.
Beautiful.
And then the other thing that happens in
I was just thinking about you. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that happens in the downtime between seasons is the three of us go through this roller coaster of emotions for 6 to 8 months where we're each texting each other. Which guy thinks we're dead, we're never coming back? The other guy is saying, dude, we're totally coming back, everything's fine. Like, we each take turns. One guy's doom and gloom. The other guy's, we're going to come back. The other guy is, I'm not sure. So you just, for 6 months between seasons, you'll see this series of text messages between the three of us about what our potential future is, not only on That Metal Show, but in entertainment, in life,
show business
in general. Like, yeah, what are we going to do with ourselves?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, let's get back to That Metal Show. Eddie Trunk, Don Jameson, and Jim Florentine. Was there some guests at first or some people that you called, like, in the first couple seasons that was like, we're not interested, that now, once the show has such a name value, are calling you to get on the show?
That the guests have said they're not interested?
Yeah, like, you know, like, in the early days, like, for example, you've had Steve Harris, you know, you've had Lars on, you've had, like, some really heavy hitters. When you called that management or called those people at first, were they kind of waiting to see how it would be, if it would grow?
No, I didn't get a sense of that. Again, I had a huge advantage because of my relationship with these guys. They already knew. It wasn't some stranger calling. They already knew, and they were already all doing my radio shows and stuff, that if I'm – and again, they already knew I was on the channel. A lot of these artists, especially in those first few seasons, I did maybe 2-3 interviews with for this channel at the previous version – before That Metal Show. So there was a total comfort zone. They knew it was legitimate. They knew that it was a new show. They knew I was already working there. It's more, and it's a problem we have to this day that people don't understand. The biggest obstacle we have is that most artists want to time their appearance with the release of a new product. We mentioned Iron Maiden. We both know Rod Smallwood. I love him. Great guy. He's a friend. But
very protective,
and very calculated on when he wants to do things. Everything. So the reason why I finally got Steve after asking 100 times is because at that time, Steve put out that British Lion thing.
Same when you had Adrian. He did Psycho.
Adrian, the Psycho Motel reissue.
Primal Rock Rebellion.
So you, and it's, but for us, that works. That mentality works if you're Letterman or Leno or even doing a weekly show 50 weeks out of a year. We work 12, maybe the most 20 weeks a year. Mm-hmm. So you can't line it all up. And that's my biggest thing I have to sell these guys. Like, don't sit and wait because the window might come and go. You can't line it up exactly. You know, so that's really the biggest obstacle is getting people to understand how we work.
Eddie, I was going to ask, not to interrupt you, Don, but...
I can't stop staring at Jim's green drink. It looks like he's drinking a cup of algae. Look at
that. It's a cup of baby poop, I think.
Old sponge.
I was going to ask you guys, you know, you guys are obviously huge metal fans, as am I. Eddie's been doing this for a long time, and like, as we mentioned, had the contacts and had friendships and relationships. Was there some guests that came on the show for you guys that you were super excited? Like you mentioned Lita earlier, people that you didn't know that you're like, oh my God, today is going to be hard to not just be a super fanboy.
Oh yeah, Manson was definitely one. Tom Morello was one. Mm-hmm. Bill Ward, Iommi, Geezer, when Ronnie James Dio came on.
Wow.
Who else?
Yeah, well,
Harris. Yeah, absolutely.
We had no contacts. So for the most part, we were meeting most of these guys for the first time.
When the drummer from Faster Pussycat shows up, you're impressed.
And Bill Ward, one of the craziest times I remember is we were filming in L.A., and I walked out of the dressing room, and Bill's just standing by himself in the hallway, and I walk out the door, and he goes, "Oh, hello, Don. How you doing, mate?" And like that was the first thing that blew my whole mind out, because I'm like, why does the drummer from Black Sabbath even know my name?
Right.
Now, how does he know by my face that I'm Don? Forget it. Like, that just killed me right there. And, you know, it's guys like him, Alice Cooper.
And Halford. I remember Halford coming on, too.
Yeah.
He's a big fan of the show. Like, oh my, because I never met Halford before either.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
See, that's the cool thing when people, and that's the power of television. You know, when people see you on TV and become fans of you, because like I said, if you're in a metal band or a rock and roll fan, there's one show to watch for our style of music. You know, but this is not the same thing, but when I did the Golden Gods one year and Geezer Butler was there, same as you guys, super nervous. "Hey, Geezer, I'm Chris Jericho." And he goes, "Oh, I've been watching you on Dancing with the Stars." Yeah. And I was like, cool. He goes, "I even voted for you, too." I was like,
really?
He's a brother voted for me on Dancing with the Stars. But because he knew this guy from TV, I've heard he's a metal guy. Same with you guys. So now you're getting recognized by people that you admire because they're admiring what you're doing as well.
Which you know, one of the things, though, that tells me that this show is really growing, something really important. You're right. Metal fans, of course, now anywhere we go, rock metal fans know us. Going to a concert or whatever, and that's we kind of get that. We know that. But what's really, really cool and really important is when people I hear from a lot of people that say to me things like, "I'm not even into that kind of music, but I like watching the show." People will think that I will take offense to that. No way. That's actually the best thing we can hear because it means we're growing beyond just the natural audience for this show. Just a couple weeks ago, you know, we go out and do live gigs, the three of us together, and we're coming back from Virginia, and we were all driving together. We stopped at a rest stop, and we walked through the rest stop, and like three, four people in the rest stop that you'd never think would be a metal fan, just a guy waiting to get a coffee or something, yelled out, "Yo, that metal show, guys," or something like that. That's kind of, that's like, okay, now this is getting to another level. But you touched on something earlier that is really important to note, too. We are the big fish in a very small pond. You know, that is important because you talked about how, well, we're kind of the only show.
The only fish in the pond, yeah.
Well, there's other stuff on the channel, but we're the bread and butter. Like, they produce this show for the channel. We're the only thing they produce internally. So it's helped to, you know, we can carry the flag for the networks to some degree.
Well, and you guys have also become kind of like the Three Stooges, like might be more apropos, but like the Three Musketeers of metal. Like, you are kind of like the everyman fan that people relate to. Like, you guys are doing, like I said, you've got your own show that you tour around. I mean, when there's a Rush DVD, you're doing the interview for it. You know, you're hosting the Golden Gods last year. You've become kind of like the faces of what used to be a rock radio DJ is now like the rock TV faces for heavy metal in a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, or as Paul Stanley called us, the Wayne's World.
Which, by the way, is hilarious.
Which we all thought was hysterical. Yeah. And in fact, we wish we were Wayne's World.
Yeah.
Because we'd wear fancier T-shirts and be in HD.
Have a better budget.
Well, the KISS fans watch this show probably more than anything.
There are certain guests that won't do this show. And I'm sure probably at this point it's KISS,
it's just Gene Ozzy. And Paul. Gene's told me privately and publicly more than one time he has no issue with me. He respects everybody's opinions. He watches the show. He must have told me three times, "I have no issue with you. I have no issue with you." So I said, "Well, why don't you come do the show then?" And he said, "Maybe I will someday." Don and I are enormous KISS fans, always have been, always will be. Do we like every single thing they've ever done? No. But would we come here and still do a respectful interview and get into discussions and debates? Absolutely. I've said many times, the best guests are the people that come and mix it up and debate and discuss and don't take it all too seriously. So our door is open to everybody. And unfortunately, Paul, who was always my favorite member of KISS, you know, just runs from it as opposed to just coming down and let's sit and talk about it. The last time I ever talked to the guy, he did an art show by my house in Jersey. And I swear to God, I looked him right in the eye and I said, "Dude, can we please go in that back office and sit down for 5 minutes? eye to eye, man to man, face to face, and tell me what the issue is. Let's clear the air on this. Because the other problem, Chris, is you well know, being a very public figure yourself and a celebrity yourself, you know that what really happens is the internet takes a comment like, hey, Chris, I don't like that shirt you're wearing today. And that gets put through the internet machine and comes out the other side of, as Eddie Trunk just said, Chris Jericho should eat crap and die. But yeah, you know what I'm saying?
I like the shirt. Well, thank I just you. Want you to know.
I appreciate
it. But you know what I'm saying. Stuff gets taken out of context, well, of course, magnified, absolutely. Blown up.
I'm sorry for Eddie dissing you.
Thanks,
I apologize.
Guys. This is the cool side of the table over here.
Obviously.
But that's the thing. You're very outspoken when you talk. And you come from a fan standpoint. But you also, is there other people that won't do the show?
Ozzy, because of Sharon.
And what's the issue with that?
Well, I can only think that it's, and again, it's on me. And I stamp, listen. It's very important to note that the three of us, when we started doing this show in the beginning, we all sat down
and got saddled with Eddie's baggage.
And I think
you're painted with the same brush now.
Ozzy was my idol. He's like, look, I'm going to burn that bridge for you. I'm like, all right.
Don is saying, Paul, I've got nothing.
Without my baggage, you wouldn't be sitting here. So don't worry about it.
I was the star child, like 13 Halloweens in a row.
Hey, listen,
the dream is dead.
Two guys out of 2,000 is not a bad ratio when you think about it. Okay. But we all sat down and we said to ourselves, it's really important that we do a show where we're honest. Let's have the same conversation on camera that we would have if we were sitting around at a bar talking. And I think that's a huge part of why this show is successful. I'm going to say, nah, I don't like Cookie Monster stuff. Don's going to say he does. You know, Jim's going to say I like this. I'm going to say, nah, I don't like that. People aren't used to seeing that so much in media, especially. So we do that. And unfortunately, some artists can't handle that. Most can. Most respect it, because they know that they're going to at least get a straight, fair shake on it. So that was a really important thing. And again, I love Ozzy. I love Sabbath. I love Ozzy, some of Ozzy's solo stuff. But I'm also honest about things. And I love getting the stories out from the guys who are the underdogs or underappreciated or who have had others rewrite their history. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say Bob Daisley wrote Ozzy's songs and lyrics and played bass on everything up through No More Tears, by the way. I'm sorry if that ruffles some people the wrong way, but it's the truth. So am I supposed to lie or rewrite somebody else's history? No, I'm never going to do that. I'm going to have Jakey Lee on my show, and he's going to talk about how he wrote Bark at the Moon but couldn't get credited and couldn't get money. So if you have a problem with it, come on and give your side of the story. But I can't get tied up in that stuff. I like everybody having a platform to present their side of things.
Yeah, I mean, honesty definitely is the best policy. I don't really like your shirt. I was lying before.
And I can see why, because it looks like every shirt in the wardrobe room. It's a black T-shirt.
It's time for another black
T-shirt.
Maybe
I got to put a stamp of, like, you know, but Chris, Dave real Menichetti on there or something. You guys will like it.
Chris, real quick.
Shanker sticker.
Real quick on this topic, because it's
one?
Important.
From Michael, sorry.
It's important. Real quick on this topic, because it's important. The guys who are on the other side of that fence deserve all the credit in the world. I'll give you a great example. Lars Ulrich, guy who you can goof about the Lou Reed record with.
His
drumming. When Death Magnetic came out, and I say it and I stand behind it to this day, I said on this show and on my radio show, love the record. The sound quality is garbage. It's distorted. It's overproduced. He didn't run from it. He didn't shut me out. You know what he did? He shot a segment with me for this show backstage at their show in Newark and discussed it with me and had a laugh about it. You know, that's all you can ask for.
Because he's in Metallica. He knows it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, but the other two guys are in Kiss and Ozzy.
I see your point. But let's talk about some of your favorite guests that you've had. I mean, there must have been some guys with some hilarious moments. I mean, the one that comes to mind, and I even asked him about it when I interviewed him for my podcast, was Ace and the Smoking Flute.
Oh, it's classic.
I mean, there's been classic stories like that that have happened quite often. Don, who's some of your favorite guests?
Well, the guy who's always great, you know, comedic fodder for us is Steven Adler. You know, he's just always has come down his endless quest to stump the trunk has been well documented.
He popped out of a birthday cake.
Yeah, popping out of a birthday cake for Eddie's birthday was just one of the most spectacular things ever, because we didn't know it was coming.
Steven Adler, of all people, right?
And not only did he pop out of the cake, he brought back the CD he won under false pretenses from Stump the Trunk like a year before.
Which we told him he was wrong when he was right or whatever.
And he brought it back, still in the wrapper. He hadn't opened it because he felt guilty that he won it under false pretenses.
I always say this all the time. That's when we were shooting in L.A., and I'm like, it was my birthday, it was a big day, and instead of getting like Megan Fox or somebody to pop out of a cake, I got Steven Adler.
Yeah, with the same hair that he had in 1987.
Yeah. And then we went to the Rainbow, and Eddie drank a lot of Jack Daniels and put forks over his eyes like the blackout album.
Wow, that's rare. That's rare. The only other time I've ever seen Trunk drink is when I took him to a go-go bar on his 40th birthday.
Wow, that was almost 15 years ago.
Was that Lookers?
Yeah, Lookers in New Jersey. That's right, Elizabeth.
Oh, right by the airport.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I know that
place. It used
to
be a great place to have great strippers there. I don't know why.
Yeah, I know. It took a turn for the worse.
Jim jumped right in. Lookers, yeah, I know. I got an account there.
That place is amazing.
I left a lot of pairs of underwear in the bathroom there.
Whenever you come home from a concert from the Meadowlands, you always stop at Lookers on the way home.
That's right there, yeah.
Pops,
right by the airport. Yeah, a couple pops, a lap dance.
Yeah, when you went to a
steak at the diner next door.
Yeah, when you went to a Rush show and it was two chicks out of 20,000 people, you got to see some. So you start, let's go to strip club. I got to get these.
Dude, last time I went to a Rush show in Atlanta, there was this gorgeous chick that I used to know that was a Hawaiian Tropic model, and she had a Rush tattoo. I'm like, you might be the only hot chick ever in the history of anything to have a Rush tattoo.
And she probably dated a guy named Rush.
Yeah, Rush
maybe
Limbaugh.
She's a Rush Limbaugh fan, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I love when Frankie Bello's on the show because he's such a ball buster and we're really good friends with him. He's known Eddie for 30 years or whatever. But it's like you don't even have to prepare. It's just like you're just going to go at each other and nobody takes it personally. You know, there's no line.
Frankie calls Don Sideburns. Hey, Del Sideburns, I said hello, idiot.
Yeah.
That son of a bitch. You know?
It never ends, you know. Ted Nugent, you know, that all you got to do is say, ladies and gentlemen, Ted Nugent, and then you say goodnight because Ted's going to just take over the show. And so when we had him last year, that was amazing. And then, you know, one of my favorites was, you know, the guy you never hear from in Motley Crue was Mick Mars.
Oh.
So to have Mick on, you know, and he even said to us backstage, he's like, I love talking to people. He goes, I just in a band with three other guys who like talking more than I do. And it just... It creates this weird mystique about me that I'm this guy who doesn't want to
do press. The times I've met him, he is a sweet, fun, cool guy.
Amazing.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
So, so to have, you know, it's almost like he's the hot chick that you can't get, you know. And it's like, yeah, we got Mick Mars. Cool, you know.
Except, hold on. We've got to break into this podcast for something very important.
Breaking news from James.
A Starbucks order.
Uh-oh. Okay, here we go.
You want the real behind-the-scenes talk is Jericho. Here we are. Starbucks order. Just a coffee with milk for me, please.
You want to
know how Jim always gets his coffee extra hot. I mean, how
do you get extra hot coffee?
Well, because by the time you get it, even when they make it, it's not hot.
But how do they make it extra hot?
Well, no, I get lattes, so the machine.
Oh, podcast on extra hot.
And you think Trunk is a diva.
Yeah, no kidding.
Extra hot lattes.
Did you hear him slurping the
algae
drink
cup?
I'm like, that's going to sound good on the mic.
I only drank Monster Energy exclusively for caffeine.
Yeah, we got another 10 minutes and we'll be done.
Yeah.
10 minutes, good.
I just want to make sure that people know that.
It's cool. Never hot when you get the coffee, though.
Okay.
It's the hottest coffee in the world.
So you're getting it super double boiled?
No, you just get it. Yeah, they just make it in the machine. They do it like 180 degrees. And if you say extra hot, they put it at like 215.
I didn't notice. That's the stuff you learn here
at
that metal show.
So if you get it that hot, though, it'll burn your vagina. It's happened to me, believe me.
Many times.
I get iced tea, so I ask it for extra cold.
They did extra ice. Who's been some of your favorite guests? You mentioned
Ted Nugent.
Manson,
Ted Nugent was definitely, because I've been a fan of his since I was a kid, never met him before. So that was a huge one, Nugent, for me. You know, Tom Morello was huge. I'm a huge Rage fan.
Mm-hmm.
He's been on a bunch of times. Lemmy. Great dude. Lemmy, of course.
We got to have, you know, cross off the heavy metal bucket list, having a Jack and Coke with Lemmy.
I remember I was in a limousine once. We went to do a radio show together, and he's like, would you like a Jack? And I'm like, sure. And would you want some ice? Okay, so he's got his hand is all dirty with stuff all over it, and he sticks it in the ice bucket and puts the ice in the glass and pours it and gives it to him. I'm like, well, hopefully the straight Jack Daniels will kill whatever germs
tastes
are on
like
his
stripper.
Hand. Yeah, exactly.
You know who one guy I missed that would have been unbelievable on the show is Dimebag.
Oh, absolutely.
If Dime was alive, how great he would have been as a guest.
And the guy that I always tell these guys all the time, they didn't know him, but I miss like hell and would have been amazing on this show with us, was Eric Carr.
Why
is
that?
Because Eric Carr, he was a dear friend of mine, but the reason why he would have been great on this show is anybody that knew him, and you can talk to anybody who was on tour with them back then and was in the band with him, he was the consummate ball buster. He was such a prankster. He had so much fun. He always loved goofing around. He loved busting my balls. If you can go back, some of them are on YouTube, old radio interviews he and I did when he would be on my show. It was nonstop ball busting. We'd take calls from people and he'd goof on. I mean, he was just so much fun. He was so loose and just laughed about everything. His attitude, his spirit, he would have been amazing with
us. That's the concept of the show. It's like you said, it's just a bunch of dudes hanging around the bar. You know, I always used to say it's like The View for heavy metal.
Well, when you talk about the best guests, of course we have the guests that we are all geeked up about. Everybody has those five or six guys who are like, oh my God, this is so amazing. For me, anybody from Aerosmith would fit in that category.
Have you had Steven on the show?
We haven't had Steven. I'm still trying, but we had Joe. We had pretty much everybody else, but Steven and Tom. But you know, for me, it's any of the guys from the 70s that I grew up with. The 80s guys, because I've been in the business since the early 80s, I kind of grew up on the scene with them. We came up together. They're in their end of it, mine in my end of it. Any of the 70s guys, if I'm looking to my left and there's Iommi, there's Sammy Hagar.
Sammy was great.
There's Joe Perry. I mean, but so y'all have, everybody has those personal things, but the guys that are the best guests for the show aren't always necessarily the biggest names. They're the guys that get it and have fun and are loose and have a good time with you. And you don't have to walk on eggshells around them. And that's the case with anything. Your show, what you're doing right now, I'm sure your best podcasts are like that.
Oh, yeah. It's not a history lesson. It's a conversation.
Yeah.
Those are the best quote-unquote interviews.
Right. That's why when we meet people at rest stops, they feel like they know you. Yeah, they follow you in the bathroom. Like, they already feel like that we're already best friends. We have this kindred spirit because they love the same music, right. And we talk on the TV as if it's just a hang.
Just a bunch of dudes hanging out.
Yeah, so it's like, if they want to come in the bathroom and pinch my helmet, you know, it's safe.
Hold your wiener for you.
Yeah, we're all friends.
The hardest thing for me to change from is the fact that doing a couple radio shows a week, doing a podcast now myself, where you just use that word, a conversation, like we're having right now, a conversation, right? The hardest thing for me doing TV and doing this show is editing, because you can't do this on TV. Mm-hmm. You've got a camera with a clock on top of it that says you got 3.5 minutes. So you have to get that conversation in 180 seconds, as opposed to we're sitting here talking for 45 minutes. It's very difficult, and it's really hard for the audience to understand, because they'll be like, for instance, we had Marky Ramone on just recently this season. Somebody hit me on Twitter like, I can't believe you didn't mention Dust, the metal band he had before the Ramones. Yeah. Not only did we mention him, we held up the record. But guess what? It got cut out because the editing has to take place because everything is so rigid for time. And, you know, I love to have the conversation. I love to talk. And TV, you just can't do it.
Tell us about, I mean, we had this experience on the radio, but you guys had Axl Rose on that metal show. And this was actually at an arena where they played, and it was very late, early in the morning.
But back to the radio thing, which kind of led into getting them on that metal show, because that's how I knew them. You and Don were both in the studio when Axel walked into my radio show, and that was before we were doing that metal show.
That's right, yeah.
So that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, how these guys would always come up and hang out on my radio show. Don was there that night.
Eddie called, Sebastian called.
Dude!
I got a text from Axl Rose as we're sitting there talking our typical BS. Axl said he might drop by, and of course, lo and behold, he shows up and stayed on the show for 3 hours or so. Remember, they had to move back your show's ending.
We took extra time, yeah.
They said, you keep him on the air as long as you can.
It was the only time my program director ever called and said, stay on as long as you want.
Yeah, because Axl Rose was there. And this is when he was super hermit. Like, I remember Sebastian's like, he's the Howard Hughes of rock and roll, man. And he showed up and hung out. We talked about Wasp and Great White and Iron Maiden and Priest.
Snorting flies with Jack Russell.
Snorting flies, you know. And then I remember, like, the icebreaker was, who do you like better, Maiden or Priest?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he goes, I like Priest better, but the first Maiden record is my favorite out of all of them.
Really?
And I remember I kept yelling at Jericho, if you go back and listen to that interview, because you know, Chris is so unfiltered sometimes and just blurts stuff out. And I was
AKA
like,
drinking.
And I was so nervous because, you know, everybody knows how volatile Axl can be. And I just kept thinking of like a scene from like the TV show 24. It's like somebody's going to cut the wrong wire and the bomb is going to go off. So every time Jericho opened his mouth, I was like, and there's a point in the interview where I actually say out loud, Jericho, if you blow this for me, I'm going to kill you, because
I said I got a bone to pick with you.
Yeah, that's how you set up a question.
Like, what? I said, when I was 17, I went and saw you guys open for Iron Maiden, and I asked you if you'd sign my album, and you said you'd be right back, and you never came back. Where did you go? And he goes, oh, I thought you were going to say that I banged your mom or your girlfriend. I was like, no.
That's where he went.
Yeah, maybe he didn't. But so here we are, you know, 10 years later or so, and you get a chance to interview Axl, which that's prime real estate, because he doesn't do interviews for anybody or anything.
We took a swing with that. The former head of music and talent for VH1, had some dialogue with his manager and said, we're going to take a shot at getting him. There's no guarantee it's going to happen, but we're going to put you guys on a plane. And listen, Axel was changing managers like every 6 months at that point, if that. He said the guy's going to do his best to bring him out to you. We're going to send you on a plane down there. We're going to set up, and we're going to hope that we can pick him off and get lucky. And we went down there, and we set up, and we waited and waited and waited and waited until about 3 o'clock in the morning, and that's when he finally walked in and sat down with us.
Oh,
and
it was five. They didn't get done playing until almost 8.
They ended at 3 a.m. playing.
They were on at midnight.
5:30.
5:40 a.m. they walked in, but I have no problem with that. How many times all of us in this room have walked out of a strip club at 6 in the morning? If I got to wait till 5:40 a.m. to interview Axel, I'm okay.
Yeah, the first TV interview in over 20 years that he's ever done. So we're like, yeah, we'll be a little tired, but, you know, we'll get through it. It'll be all right. We all know he's a nocturnal guy. Even that night from the radio show, we ended up hanging out. I remember going home in the daylight.
Bungalow 8.
Yeah, Bungalow 8.
Bungalow 8, we had a bigger area than Lindsay Lohan did.
And they made her leave at 4 and said we could all stay, which is incredible. So that's the power of Axel. So, you know all the stuff about him, and you know he kind of lives by his own rules. So it's like, well, we're here. We could pack up and leave, or we can stay and wait for the guy to come out. And then he wanted to shower and stuff because it was for TV. So when he came in, we actually had to cut the interview short because we had to catch flights.
Yeah, I remember that. VH1 got us really nice hotel rooms and in Miami, and we never saw him because we got to Miami, we dropped our bags, and then we had to end up going directly from the arena right to the airport to get home in time and to catch our flights. It was crazy.
I thought that was funny, too. You guys are just wandering around just getting interviews with anybody.
Oh, we interviewed the lighting guy for Buck Cherry.
We needed to fill a show, so we didn't know if we were going to get Axel, so we were like, let's interview everybody else in Guns N' Roses, the guys at Buck Cherry who are opening, and then we'll figure out what happens. But in Axel's defense, like, supposedly he didn't know until about 3:30 in the morning that we were even there to interview him until one of his band members said, hey, are you going to talk to VH1? He's like, nobody told me, so.
Which is very possible. There's a lot of people who have said, oh, there's no way. How would he have not known? But if you understand how his management and his stuff worked and understand the way we went down there to do that, very much kind of like, you know, not with no guarantees we were going to get it. It was kind of just being in the right place in the right time, and him, somebody in his camp finally saying, well, you know, these guys are, why don't you go, oh, yeah, it's that guy that you did the radio thing with a couple years ago. Yeah, go talk to him. And that it had to kind of happen like that. The other quick, funny thing, 2 minutes. Okay. The other quick, funny thing about that is that Jeff, our producer, just walked in. I remember him because he kept dangling me out there like bait because Axel knew me from the radio show.
Right.
And Jeff comes up to me and it's like 5 o'clock. And we're like, there's no way the guy's even still in the building. So Jeff goes, come on, you're coming with me. We got to figure this out. So he grabs me. We walk down the hall to where their dressing rooms were on the other side. And we walk back. And I swear to God, I expected to open up the door and just see everything cleared out. Nobody there. The door opened. It was like a scene out of Almost Famous. There was smoke coming out, people sitting on road cases smoking and drinking. Hey, dude, you want a beer? At this point, I'm up 13 hours. I'm like, no, I want an interview. Where is the guy? And they're like, oh, he'll come out. Don't worry, he's still here. I'm like, he's still here? Oh, I figured he'd be at South Beach by then. Yeah. No, he's still here. Come and have a beer. And the three of us, would, you know, me and Jeff, our producer, with like bloodshot eyes, like, just get him to us. Just get him to us. But they were kicking back like it was noon, you know? Yeah.
Last few questions. I know we're running out of time here. Who is your golden ticket guest, like the ultimate guest that you want to see come on the show?
Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, have you tried to get Eddie at all?
Never met him. Would love to sit down and interview with him.
Because I know from my experience, the Van Halen camp, they run all through Janie, his wife.
I know.
PR.
I talk to her
very
all the time.
Tight.
I'm with Jim. My number one guy would be Eddie. He sent us a rig for our set that is up there. He watches
today.
The
Rich
show.
He
ever since these guys did the first field piece out front of Van Halen at the Garden in our first season, which they watched and I heard it from about it. He watches and everything, but they're incredibly tough to get. But yeah, my number one guy would be Eddie Van Halen. I ask every season, including this season, through his wife. She responds, but it's always no.
Well, I would say, yeah, I mean, I always hold that hope, but Ozzy, man, you know, to have Ozzy, I met Ozzy once before, but to have him come and sit, and, you know, we've heard from several people he's a fan of the show.
He watches
so
it.
So it would be great, yeah, so Ozzy would be my guy.
I would love Ozzy, too, and I would love Paul Stanley, and I would love Gene Simmons, and some of these guys that, you know, again, those are the only...
We haven't had anybody from Deep Purple, either. It would be great to have Roger Glover and Ian come on, that'd be killer.
It's tough with the guys that don't live in America, like the Purple guys don't, because
Jimmy
then you're
Page,
really trying to...
Brian May.
There's also, we had Brian May on from the Download special very briefly. There's also guys, believe it or not, that shy away from, even though by now people know that metal show, that's the name, but it's a rock and metal show. There are people that, artists that will shy away from the term metal. Jimmy Page is one of them. I've had direct dialogue with Jimmy Page's people. He doesn't, will not do anything with the word metal in it. He refuses to. I would love,
because he's kind of one of the pioneers,
right? And in the rock world, and people might snicker at this, but I'd love to interview Bon Jovi, John Bon Jovi.
Oh, dude, that's huge.
It's huge. I mean, huge. That guy laid the blueprint for what the '80s hard rock was.
You don't have to analyze.
But I'm
it.
Saying
Absolutely.
The metal fans would probably not get that connection.
But you've had, you know, Rick Nielsen on the show.
I would, but John's never going to come on and do something with metal in the name. I mean, his picture's on the Light FM radio station billboard outside. It's a whole other thing now.
Ever try to get Hetfield at all?
James told me at the Big Four show, he watches the show, he loves it, keep doing what you're doing, it's really important. I said, why don't you come on? And he just said, that's Lars's thing for us. Mm-hmm. Lars does that sort of stuff for us.
Maybe one of these days.
Maybe.
Bruce Dickinson, he'd be great.
Again, hard with the guys out of the country, but we had Steve, we had Adrian. We'd love to get Nico.
Yeah, and
Nico be a character. Nico wants to do it, but that all has to run through Rod when Rod's ready to do it.
Yeah. Last question. All-time favorite band?
Black Sabbath.
Motorhead. Chirag Lamont. One of two.
Put the grudges aside.
Well, I've always said 1,000 times Kiss was the gateway to everything for me. I've never denied that. Kiss was the gateway to everything. It would be Kiss or UFO or Aerosmith.
Okay.
Those three bands.
Who's the three singers of Helloween?
Stop!
I got it!
Jericho. Jericho, the greatest line, was it, Helloween is my UFO? Jericho said to me.
Michael Kiske.
That's one.
Who are
that's
the other two?
One. Kai Hansen and Andy Daris.
Now, who's in Gamma Ray from Helloween?
Kai Hansen.
Okay, I'm just trying to get the lineage.
Okay, well, you can't
see. I learned from not knowing the answer.
That's the thing. You guys need more. You need a German power metal guy on your squad.
Are you a German power metal guy?
Dude, I got a Helloween tattoo. What
but just that's one band. Are you? Well, do you know the whole gamut of German power metal?
I know Gamma Ray. That's it. All right, guys, we got a big show today. I know I'm on. I got to get ready too. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you.
So just because your season-long fantasy football team is out of money, don't mean you are. You can still score instant cash and bragging rights if you play weekly fantasy football at DraftKings.com. You can challenge your friends in a custom league, or you can join an existing one to play for your fair share of the $1 billion in prizes up for grabs this year. Yeah, you heard me. Clean out your ears, Junior. I said billions with a B. Billions in prizes. And if you use my promo code Y2J, you can play for free. All right? Playing at DraftKings.com is easy. You just pick your contest, draft your players, collect your winnings. That's it. Done. You don't have to worry about injuries. You don't have to deal with the waiver wire. You aren't stuck with the same lineup every week. You can win instant cash this very weekend. DraftKings is crowning a new millionaire every week this season. A millionaire every week. You could be the next one, but only if you play. So here's what you got to do. You go to DraftKings.com now and use my promo code Y2J. You play for free with your first deposit in Sunday's $1 million fantasy football contest. First place takes home $100,000 and a lifetime of bragging rights. So enter Y2J now at DraftKings.com. That's Y2J now at DraftKings.com. This is not fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Thanks to Eddie Trunk, Don Jameson, and Jim Florentine from That Metal Show. Always fun to sit around and talk metal with those guys. Hopefully a season 15 announcement is coming very, very soon. But one last big thanks to you guys for listening today and listening every week, twice a week, and for supporting all of my Talk is Jericho sponsors. They're the ones who keep this podcast going for you for free, all right? DraftKings.com. Play for free when you use my promo code Y2J. Great sponsor. How about DDP Yoga? Win an autographed copy of DDP Yoga by tweeting me your own DDP Yoga story at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter and using the hashtag Podcast1. What about BetDSI? Use the promo code Jericho10 to get $10 free. Place your bets. Place your bets. And then there's Casper.com, the most comfortable mattress you'll ever sleep on. Use my promo code Jericho. Get $50 towards the purchase of your mattress, okay? And of course, thanks to Amazon, longest running sponsor of Talk is Jericho. Easiest way to support the show. You want to use them TIJ links and find them by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got them Amazon links for the USA, the UK, the Canada A. Every time you use the TIJ Amazon links, it kicks back a small percentage of the cash to this show to help us cover production costs. Listen, I've been doing all my holiday shopping on Amazon. Don't tell anybody. I haven't even gone to the mall yet. I've done all my holiday shopping. I've done them through the Talk is Jericho links. I'm robbing Peter to PayPal. I don't care. I want to pass this deal along to you. Do your Christmas shopping on Amazon. You can still get Christmas presents if you got Amazon Prime. Do that all through the Talk is Jericho link. All right. Keep listening. Keep rocking and keep shopping. Podcast One. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right-hand corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Thank you so much. Remember, keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. What's going on around the world? You're going to find out. And what's going on around here? Rock and roll, man. Thanks to all of you for listening. I want you to stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And see you next Wednesday right here on Talk is Jericho for the long-awaited Toronto is Jericho Live. All right, Jericho Live in front of a live audience in Toronto, recorded a few months ago. It's a great, great time. It's a little bit of a Q&A hosted by Damian Abrams of the punk band Effed Up. He's kind of the MC for all this. I'm telling a lot of stories. It's a little bit of a Jericho moment. Remember last year I did London is Jericho for my stand-up show? This is the same type of vibe. Toronto is Jericho with special guest Damian Abrams from Effed Up. And, of course, Santino Marella will also make a special appearance on Toronto is Jericho this Wednesday. Go check out Star Wars. Go listen to Talk is Jericho. And have a good, good day. And thank you and a big yeah! Boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.